text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
Welcome back to the Nine Till Noon Show. We're into the second hour of the programme. It's great to have you on board. In relation to the email we had on divorce a little earlier on, excuse me, please. We applied for a non-contentious divorce, I imagine that must read. This was in July of 2018. It was all very straightforward. It was only granted in November 2024, a total of over 6 years. It's definitely not an acceptable length of time. No, because, you know, it depends on personal circumstances, but perhaps you want to get on with your life. So that was a non-contested divorce that took 6 years. And yet we got from the court service information that such a divorce should happen in less than a year. A caller says the rally cars are regularly on the R254, not just during the Donegal rally. Check it out Friday night. Thank you for that. And that text came in because I was supposing we got complaints about that just in advance of the Donegal rally. And I was wondering if it was isolated to that time. But as it turns out, this listener says it's not just during the rally. Thanks so much for your clarification there. Hi, Greg. I'm sick of people crying about young ones diffing their cars. I would say there is older ones at it too, but do those people forget they were young too themselves? I would say they were no angels, so let the young ones be young for a few years because they'll get old. No, I don't think this is not pointing the finger at young people. Just some of the people we've spoken to, for instance, aren't legal to drive on the roads and they have these cars. And in other areas, they can travel and diff in private spaces where it's safe. I think if you were older, maybe you've been working a few years, you would be prepared to travel greater distance or make a day of it or something. So it is kind of specifically for young people in this case. And it's not to target them, because if you've listened over the last couple of the days, there's a very sympathetic tone. There are those who are obviously very frustrated by it happening on public roads, and they're expressing that, and that's fine. But I think the majority of texts are sympathetic, and we heard from Councillor Jo Beard there. She would be open to exploring this as well, taking everybody's views into consideration. I just want to make a comment to be read out on rallying. The Donegal rally passed our lands this year, and we welcome the revenue it has generated. However, we've not benefited from it. We've encountered damage to farmland, fencing from people climbing over, and we've contacted the Donegal Motor Club numerous times to no avail or with no response. A caller says, I just registered simply to spoil the vote because it's not a democratic process. I'll then deregister afterwards. So there does seem to be a big enough movement to around the country to spoil votes in the presidential election, because there's a decent sized cohort of people that don't feel they're represented or don't like the system or don't like the fact that certain candidates are on there. I admire them. It would take all my energy to go and vote for a candidate. To then go to the bother of going in to not vote for a candidate, I don't think I would have that drive or commitment. If you do, and that's how you want to protest, well, fair play, but my word, I just wouldn't have the energy. But that's on me. A few more on diffing, by the way, because it's one of those stories that's got a lot of interest. I agree with Michael. Stop rally cars racing in Glenveagh National Park. I read that one out. Good one. We should build special tracks for youngsters to race illegal cars. I can't believe that a father would encourage his son to participate in this dangerous and polluting behaviour. This will only increase the amount of illegal behaviour on the public roads as they practice for these events, says the listener. Let's go to Inishowen. It should be highlighted. It should not be highlighted. We should not be encouraging their young, innocent minds to be at such a thing, or allow them to think it's acceptable. It's a very dangerous sport. Diffing in a controlled environment, I'm not sure how dangerous it is. Diffing on a public road, incredibly dangerous. But if you have a large space and you get a car that's going around in a circle around an object or whatever it might be, I mean, the danger is minimal, I think. Now, I think what you're also saying, though, and this is worthy of conversation, you're saying that really by entertaining the fact that don't do it on the roads will give you some place to do it, that we should knock that on the head. Which is your view, and we appreciate your time. Ask Councillor O'Farrey what is wrong with the toilets for our other big attraction, Errigal, that Donegal County Council can't sort out. Yeah, indeed. on the issue of tourism. And actually, we're going to be speaking to a representative from the hotel industry about tourism this year, very shortly after the bingo numbers, in fact. But on the subject of tourism, tourism businesses thrive when operated by people who have a vested interest. Anything the state touches eventually turns to crap, they say. Another, Ireland has outpriced itself for tourists, food, accommodation and transport all too expensive, and the government is set to limit Airbnb in Donegal and other rural counties dependent on tourism. The Airbnb, how it will impact Donegal, it's in certain areas with a certain population. I think much of it will be untouched, but we shall see. Last one before the break. Hi, Greg. I was in the town park in Letterkenny recently. There were lots of families around with children running about the place. A lad lands on the back of an electric scooter and starts fighting a lad that was there outside the vestry. Scooter lad with a big kitchen knife trying to slash the other lad. Gardaí arrived 10 minutes after they were called with lights on and sirens blazing, so they heard them coming a mile away. And even though the lads were still there when they were out of their cars, the guards just strolled through the park towards them, giving them plenty of time to scatter. I can't believe this type of thing happens here. It's disgraceful. Listen, we have to sort out an issue. I did reference this actually yesterday in passing. That's unacceptable behaviour. We have to get knives out of people's hands. You know, people being slashed with knives, it's not the only time it's happened. It's not the only place it's happened. But, I mean, you talk about places being deemed unsafe to go. You start seeing a further increase in knife crime. Now, the Gardaí have to respond with sirens and lights on because they've heard reports of someone brandishing a knife. So you can't creep up on them because maybe the sirens and the lights might actually stop whatever might be about to happen. So I wouldn't blame the guards for responding with the blues and twos, as they say. Whatever happened after that, I wasn't privy to that. I'm not sure if they spoke to them or secured the knife or whatever might have happened thereafter. But I think in an emergency where someone's brandishing a knife or alleged to be doing so, the guards have to respond with sirens blaring because it could stop something in the act. You know, think if it were an assault or a sexual assault or something, startle whomever might be about to commit a crime. And if they flee, it's probably better than them carrying through with the crime, if that makes sense. But you'd hope they'd be apprehended and dealt with by law. Yeah, but listen, it's scary. People are worried. And, you know, those stories, those voices have to be heard too. Welcome back. Now, we heard yesterday hoteliers say the ongoing drop in the spend by overseas visitors poses an enormous challenge for tourism. CSO figures this week show a drop of 9% in August compared to the same month last year, which is part of a broader decline with overseas expenditure down over 13% in the past year. We are joined on the programme now to discuss this by Aisling Arnold, Chair of the Donegal Hotels Federation. Good morning, Aisling. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Very well, thank you.
It's good to have. Are you a week old?
I do. Sorry.
Oh, bless you. Thanks.
You can hear my voice.
No, it's fine. But thanks so much for joining us nonetheless. I appreciate that. Aisling, obviously the CSO figures sort of paint a national picture. From hotels in the county, did we see, you know, that kind of a decline in August?
We did indeed, unfortunately, Greg. I think, you know, as you rightly pointed out there, we've had a 13% decrease on year to date, and we've certainly felt that this drop here in the county as well. We had a branch meeting there last week, and this was one of the topics that we discussed, and the overall decline in spend and the decline in actual visitors coming to Donegal as well.
And I mean, obviously, you know, you all have an opinion. Is there a consensus as to what's going on?
I think from an international point of view, from a tour operator point of view, possibly if you want to look at it at a kind of a bigger level, when they're pricing to come to Ireland, we have become very expensive to come here to visit. And if you compare us to the likes of Scotland, the tour operators have now chosen to visit destinations like Scotland because it's cheaper. And one of the reasons, obviously, that we have, you know, become a little bit more expensive over the last number of years is the restoration there of that increase into the 13.5% VAT. So I think as a, you know, the bigger picture here is that Ireland has just become too expensive to visit, and whilst here then the visitors are spending less, unfortunately, because they've maybe spent their money already on the travel getting here, or, you know, their accommodation when they've arrived.
Just speaking of sort of hotels or restaurants in this county, and often hotels in corporate a restaurant, there's no gouging going on, is it? I mean, you have to pay your water rates, your commercial rates, the increases in staff wages, electricity, you know, to keep the lights on. And not just in the summer where you know, but also you have to make enough in the summer, dependent on if you open in the winter. I'm not talking about your business specifically, to sort of stay open, losing money in the winter as well. I mean, there's no gouging going on up here. And people wonder, well, why is a hotel bed this price at that time? But presumably that's to literally keep the lights on.
Absolutely, Greg. And, you know, one of the key messages that I would, you know, be expressing here today is that, you know, price increases are certainly not something that I myself as a hotelier wants to be passed on to the customer, nor do any of the hotels or restaurants in the county or nationally for that matter. The fact of the matter is, as you rightly pointed out, we have energy costs that have increased significantly over the last 24 months, water rates, the food, the input costs like your food and drink purchases, your insurance costs, our wage increases. And unfortunately, like, it's kind of a simple maths, you know, if, you know, for a business to operate, it has to make a profit, and to sustain, it needs to make a profit. And in order to do that, it has to be priced accordingly against the costs that we're faced with. So certainly there's absolutely no gouging going on. The pricing that is there is reflective of what is needed to ensure that the business can cover the costs. And ultimately, Greg, a lot of the time, that's all that is happening, is those business costs are just being covered.
Is there any argument for us to try and decouple more from the East Coast or the big cities and try and say, look, if you look at it from an average, holidaying in Ireland can be expensive, but look what we have to offer here in the Northwest. You know, I see a lot of these TikTok videos of American tourists and what have you, and they do the four usuals, you know, the Ring of Kerry or the Cliffs of Moher or what have you, right? And they stay in, you know, some of the places they mention, you know, they're some of the most expensive places in the country. If we could get a message out here that you can get Ireland right, but you can get it cheaper in our part of the world. I don't know if that's achievable, but I would be very frustrated if your business was sort of painted with the same brush as another business in a different area.
Absolutely. And I think funny is, since I've come on board as chair of the Donegal Irish Hotels Federation, that has been one of my key focuses and one of my main goals. And, you know, I think here in Donegal, the kind of the consensus and the kind of the word that we would have around our board meeting tables is that there is value for money to be had here, and we need to get that message out. So we're actually just embarking on a campaign which is starting today, which is Unrushed, Unspoiled Donegal, which is in collaboration with Donegal Tourism and Fáilte Ireland. And that is really to drive that message home, that you can come to Donegal and you can have that lovely, slower paced, relaxed holiday. And also you can get value for money within that. And that is something that I will be continuing to drive now over the next until my term is up, basically, to ensure that we can get that message across. And as you rightly said, people come into the country, they get on a bus and they go to Kerry, which is the same distance actually as coming to Donegal, but it's a mindset, and it's because there's the, you know, the...
But that's what's marketed. They believe that that's the Irish holiday. Because what's marketed to them. There's another thing as well too, and I'll get a bit of heat for this as well, but it's the criticism of those in the tourism industry, because, you know, people might now text in and say, I priced staying in Donegal Town for two nights at the weekend, and I could get a four-night all-inclusive holiday in Albufeira for the same price. Now, I'm not saying that's an exact example, but you have to look at the electricity prices that businesses are paying in Albufeira. You have to look at the minimum wage or the average income. You have to look at the VAT and tax that's on beer or food, you know, the core materials. But it's funny. It's the hotels or the pubs that get the criticism here, but not those that are responsible for creating the environment that makes it so expensive to do business here. It's kind of, you know, we have a habit in this country of sort of blaming the wrong people sometimes, I think.
And I think that's, you know, where there's huge frustration coming from the hoteliers and the restaurateurs here in the country, because as I said to you at the beginning, we certainly don't want to be having price hikes every single year. And we want to be able to remain competitive, and that's where we're struggling at the minute, because of the ever increasing costs, the value for money and the competitiveness side is starting to become a little bit more difficult from a business point of view. So the government do need to look at this as a bigger picture. You know, they need to look at given the supports, the necessary supports, and the I suppose the correct direction for the hospitality sector. They need to look at this from a long-term standpoint of view. We employ 270,000 people in Ireland. 70% of that is outside of Dublin, which is really important to remember. So we are a key driver for rural and economic development and diversification, and also rural employment. So that is key for the government to realise this. We also contribute, you know, 4.4% to the national economy, and we also represent 13% of the workforce. So hospitality and tourism is a vital part of, you know, the overall contribution to
This is where I think the problem is, Aisling. That's what you believe. I'm not sure the government believes that, because we're seeing a downturn in tourism. We're seeing a reduction in the take in tourism. We are... But at the same time, right, and also too, I'll make another point in a second. But at the same time, we're seeing growth in the economy, you know, and it's reliant on certain unsustainable areas. So what you need is someone to actually understand the situation and say that, you know what, if the arse falls out of the data centers or foreign direct investment, actually tourism's going to be one of the last men standing. So they need to sort of say, right, you know, the economy's doing well. We are at officially full employment, but recognise that you still need to look after the tourism industry, because that's what will be there, you know, when other things start to fade away. So if they're just looking at balance sheets, listen, what did they do when in terms of the VAT rate? They said, well, listen, we can give the tourism industry a VAT rate, or we can cut we can increase social welfare payments. It was either or. You know what I mean? That was arguably a dirty trick, because effectively then it turns the public against tourism, because you're taking money out of the hard-pressed people of this country. We never do we see budgets compared like we did comparing a reduction in VAT to social welfare payments. We never see that. The government don't do that, but they did this time.
They did, and I think it's a very short-term approach, number one. Number two, it's the completely wrong approach in terms of an overall view to the tourism and hospitality. At the end of the day, there was flippant comments made around that same time about, oh, well, we can't, you know, protect every business if they're closing their doors and things like that, which is absolute nonsense, because at the end of the day, if we don't have businesses with their doors open, we lose employment. Those people go back onto the live register. And also it's a knock-on effect that has in a, for example, a rural community here in Dunfanaghy, for example. So if there's a business to close here in Dunfanaghy, the knock-on effect that has on the rest of the businesses in the village or the activity provider. So if I was to close my doors in the morning as a hotelier, the restaurants are going to suffer, the pubs are going to suffer, the activity providers are going to suffer. So that in turn then reduces employment, and also it reduces the length of term that we're open for during the year. So, or those businesses are open for during the year. So again, comparing or making that comparison that they did and putting us in that same limelight is absolutely ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. And there's no long-term thought process there in terms of making comparisons like that.
Just generally, before you let you go, Aisling, we were talking earlier on about the likes of Glenveagh being closed 2 days a week. And I'm just wondering, as someone, you know, we're in the shoulders of the season now. Other people are texting in also saying that things close very early in this county. Is there something to that maybe, you know, yous are opening and saying, look, come visit us, you know, try and keep it really busy up to Halloween or whatever the plan might be. But sometimes, you know, the state in terms of Glenveagh and funding it being open 7 days or making sure public toilets are open even off season. Is that important? Does that all factor into the product, I wonder?
Oh my goodness, it's massive, because Glenveagh for us, for example, we're sending visitors there daily, Greg. You know, that's domestic and international visitors that are coming to stay with us. And to have such a huge, vitally important visitor attraction having to close 2 days a week is absolutely ludicrous. It's impacting on the whole of the county. There's the people come, you know, the tour, if I'm looking at it from an international visitor point of view, people could come in and stay in Donegal town and stay, for example, in one of the hotels there, and they will get a bus and they will come to Glenveagh. They might come and stop and have lunch with me. They might stop in a restaurant. They might stop in a village and walk up and use, you know, all the facilities are there and the amenities are there within the village. You know, it's not just myself that's 20 minutes up the road. It's the entire county that suffers from that. And I don't understand, and I find it very hard to get my head around, that the government aren't supporting Glenveagh in this, in their plea to what is a very simple ask. Being closed 2 days a week in peak season, might I add, is absolutely crazy. So where is that going to lead them now going into the off season and things like that? And to answer your question there, you talked about people saying things close early here in the county. I think from when Pulse Ireland brought in the Wild Atlantic Way, there was a real driving message there to get the county open and along that West Coast open year round. I think we have come an awful long way, Greg, in terms of how long that or the length of the term of the season now. But unfortunately, you know, these are some of the challenges our business are facing now with the cost of doing business. And this is why we need the government to step in now, really give us what they promised, is this the VAT rate reduction, in order for us to be able to pass this on and for us to be able to continue business year round. You mentioned it earlier on, a rural business is not making money year round. They're making it X amount of months a year, and then they're sustaining jobs for the rest of the season, and they're sustaining the fixed costs that the business has. So we do not want to regress in this county. We want to progress, and we want to be able to stay open, welcome our domestic visitors, welcome our international visitors, and show the county for what it is, value for money, the absolutely beautiful countryside that we have here and all the amenities and facilities that we have.
Fascinating insight. Really appreciate that so much. Thanks, Aisling. Get well soon.
Thanks so much
for joining us. All right, look after yourself. That is Aisling Arnold there, who is chair of the Donegal Hotels Federation, of course, in Dunfanaghy, Arnold's Hotel. Lots of you texting in relation to that. And it's a funny one, because I'm going to go through the messages. Even though we sort of had that convo there, a lot of the criticism is still of hotel owners, people in the tourism industry, and not those that set the groundwork for that within that business operates, if that makes sense. Now, I'm not here as a PR for tourism, but I think we need to sort of maybe look at it more broadly. Okay, let's take a break. Back with more shortly. We're joined on the programme now by road traffic lawyer Patrick Horan. Good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for your time.
Hi, Greg. Good to speak to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, you've been highlighting an issue, and I suppose looking behind the headlines, so to speak. But we'll start with the fact that Derry is the most common home address for people caught drink driving. That's across, I presume, the north, across the six counties.
It is. It actually incorporates everybody who lives outside the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
So if you were to take into account the UK, EU, non-EU, that total is 25, and Derry on its own is 50, and it's considerably higher than the rest of the counties in the north, yeah.
And what is the medical bureau's thinking and your thinking behind this, Patrick?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the bureau's kind of speculating a little bit. They don't know. I mean, they're not there inside in Donegal Garda Station, which they cite as being, I think, the fifth highest in the country for specimens taken. But they kind of, you know, occasionally when you read their documents, they release reports every year, and they're kind of full of data. But one of the things they say is that they think that it may be due to the proximity of the border county of Donegal with Donegal Garda Station. So I don't know, maybe our brothers and sisters in Derry are filled with the joys of liberation, maybe when they come across the border and kind of lose control of themselves. I don't know. They don't know themselves, but then, of course, if it's just Derry and Donegal and they're linked by a border, well, I'm pretty sure Cavan and Monaghan and places like that are linked to the border too. And the people who live across the borders in those areas tend to be maybe more law-abiding. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't know. As you mentioned, Donegal Garda Stations recorded the fifth highest specimens of drink driving in 2023. So you can compare that, can't you? Meath and Limerick would have similar numbers, but they're obviously certainly much greater population centres. And this is not necessarily something we see mimicked in sort of sister counties across the border west to east. It seems something particular to Donegal Derry.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Antrim, they say 24 arrests came from people with addresses in Antrim, 20 from Down, 10 from Fermanagh, 21 from Tyrone, 14 from Armagh, and Derry was 50. So it's considerably ahead of the rest. But it seems that the roads policing unit up there in Donegal are pretty active. And yeah, they're catching a lot of guys who are coming across the border. And I think it may have something to do with the fact, and I've come across this before, where people have this false belief that, well, you know, if I'm arrested and prosecuted for drink driving in the Republic of Ireland, it doesn't matter, I'll be okay in the north. Mm. Well, you won't. You'll be put off the road up there too. We have this unique treaty of mutuality between Ireland and the UK, which means if you're disqualified in the Republic, that disqualification can be recognised in the UK and vice versa. And that includes Northern Ireland. So I think some of it may be driven, pardon the pun, from a false understanding of what it means to be disqualified in the Republic of Ireland. It'll affect you up there too.
And like, we don't have the statistics, do we, to compare levels of enforcement? Because is it a higher rate of drink driving or a higher rate of detection, I wonder? And by the way, is it specific to drink driving or is drink and drug driving?
Well, what they were saying in their report was that they were just talking about blood and urine specimens in particular. What they were saying was they just spoke about blood and urine. I don't know if that if within the blood specimens there's drug driving detections, but I suspect so. The problem that they're having now is the rapid increase in cocaine use across the country. That's having crazy. A major problem right now.
I mean, I've tracked those figures over the year, and it used to be like at a weekend 10 drink arrests, 2 drugs. And now, if it were 12, it's like, you know, 7 drug arrests and the round to being drink. I just wonder if there's a particular relationship in terms of the movement of people between work, you know, relationships, holiday homes, etc., between Derry and Donegal. If it's more down to that, that the two areas are actually more intertwined, almost part of the, you know, part of the one area compared to some of the other areas we might be comparing them to.
Maybe, maybe, yeah. I do know that a lot. I mean, you guys would know better than me, but I was in Derry a few months ago and really liked the place. I like that part of the world, Buncrana, Letterkenny, and Derry. And I found a certain commonality between the peoples. You know, sometimes you had to think twice that you were actually in Derry. Mm-hmm. There were so many southern registered cars up there. I guess a lot of people from the south are working up there and maybe vice versa. So there's a lot of inter-community relations, yeah. I guess. And as to other factors, I don't know. But I do think that people do have this generalized false notion that if I get put off down here, I'll be okay in the north.
Yeah, I get you.
That's leading to a lot of problems. Patrick, but cocaine, as I said before, is a major problem right now.
Do you practice in the north or the south, Patrick? I should know that, sorry.
No, in the south. Okay. I just practice. I have been to court in Donegal and Buncrana and everywhere else in the country, but no, I don't practice in Northern Ireland.
Just one question then in relation to that, and I've always been fascinated by this. Maybe you have an insight. In terms of the incredibly high level of people that choose not to hand in their licences to the court when they're put off the road, do you have any insight from a legal profession as to how many people know that they don't actually have to hand in their licence? Because I'd be crapping myself, right? I'd chuck it at the judge, not literally, right? But I'd say, right, okay, you've asked for this, here it is. But overwhelmingly, that people seem to know that they don't need to actually hand in the licence. Do you have any insight as to why that might be as a road traffic lawyer?
I don't know. I think it's coming down to this false belief that you don't have to, and that comes across in online forums and notice boards where people say you don't have to. You do have to hand in your license. You certainly would have to have your license if you're being disqualified. You'd have to have your license with you in court. The judge is going to ask, "Where's your license? You should have it with you." The summons you got said, "Bring it to
Well,
court."
how come so many know that they don't have to?
I
I know
think
they
they just.
should, but
Yeah, I don't think it's a conscious and deliberate thing. I'm not bringing my license. I think it's down to the fact they're misreading the documentation. I have to constantly sometimes tell clients they miss that small area. They're just thinking about the case or forgetting about the knock-on stuff. But if you do get disqualified, the first thing the court clerk will look for is your license, and you'll have to hand it in. But in general, people do they do hand them in eventually. But I think on the day of court, they're so frazzled with what they're about to face that that's one thing they forget. But in general, when I represent people, thankfully it doesn't happen too often. But where it does happen, they would have their license with them to hand into court.
Finally, do we need to throw out or redraft the road traffic legislation? Is it a basket case, as some people feel, Patrick? I mean, you're on the side of it, are you, where maybe you have to work on behalf of your clients and you have to test the law, I presume, right? But do you think the road traffic laws fit for purpose?
I do. I think there's the. I mean, well, people often complain about what they call technicalities. People are getting away with technicalities. That's the word you hear. That's actually that word does not even exist. It was created by or coined by the media many years ago. What you have is the law. Either the law is followed or it's not. Okay, it's just not. I mean, there was two of my cases that were struck out last week in various different parts of the country for various different reasons. And they're not technicalities, it's the law. You either follow the law or you
Yeah,
don't. Now, if you
true.
don't follow
Yeah.
the law, then you're on a bit of a slippery slope. But I find that with the guards across the country, they're very well capable and able to prosecute these cases. And they do place a heavy reliance on detections for drink and drug driving. It's just a major part of what they do. It always has been, even when I was in the job many years ago.
All right, listen, Patrick, thanks so much for your insight. I appreciate it. Look after yourself, Patrick. That's road traffic lawyer Patrick Horan there. Derry, the most common home address for people caught drink driving in the Republic. Okie doke. I'll get to the weather in a second. I just want to reference an update I got from Irish Water in relation to the boil notice for the Glenties Ardra area, because someone messaged in yesterday saying, look, what's going on here? Just to give you an update then, following a deterioration in the raw water quality entering the water treatment due to inclement weather conditions, the notice was issued on the 15th of September to protect the health of customers. Uisce Éireann's primary focus is and always will be the protection of public health. Monitoring of the supply is continuing, and these results will be kept under review and shared with the HSEs. We continue to liaise with them. And in the meantime, all customers in Glenties Ardra public water supply are advised to boil the water before use until further notice. So, in other words, I don't have any concrete update for you other than to say Uisce Éireann says it is actively trying to get that water back to a safe standard. Neil McDonald's Chief Executive of the Irish Small and Medium Enterprise Association, and he is with me now. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, retailers who you represent say they're vulnerable to defamation claims arising from accusations of theft or unpaid bills. This then has the knock-on effect, of course, of increasing legal or meaning people have to face legal costs, but also increasing insurance costs. What's happening here? What's the connection between, retailers trying to protect their stock or their product effectively and then ending up being accused of defamation?
Well, thanks, Greg, to you, and morning to your listeners. Believe it or not, the legal advice for retailers now who see someone stealing stock from their shop is let them go. Tell them at the door that they're not welcome to return, and if they do return, they'll be treated as trespassers. But do not ask them to show a receipt. Do not ask them to open their bag, because if you say anything like that to them, it's potentially defamatory, and you're looking at a minimum of 5 to 7,000 euro settlement with them. And if they hit you with circuit court papers, that settlement is going to cost you 30,000, including legal fees. So, what we're trying to do is to bring back something that was actually in the general scheme of reform for the Defamation Act back in 2023, but it mysteriously disappeared, which is a thing called transient retail defamation. And that would mean that a person who was asked to show a receipt or who was asked to open a bag, or this also happens, believe it or not, when your 50 € note is checked at a bar in a shop with one of those little pens, if someone is told, sorry, your note doesn't pass muster, you'll need to give me another note. What we want is to have those prevented as courses of action against the retailer.
Right, okay. Never knew. Now, this has been discussed in the Dáil. A bill is being progressed in this space. But, Neil, are you concerned that they're not necessarily getting to the core of the problem here?
Oh, absolutely not, Greg. And you put your finger on it. The bill, the reform bill, went through the Dáil effectively on the nod in July, and the only issue that was spoken about was juries in defamation trials. You would think that jury defamation trials were commonplace, but Ireland typically has about 300 defamation cases per year. That's 1.4 times the number they have in England and Wales. That's not a mistake. On per capita, that's 18 times the level of defamation in litigation that they have in England and Wales. And almost none of those cases happen in the High Court. They're almost all circuit court cases. And I know the Gerry Adams case took a huge amount of media attention this year. Almost never do you have a jury defamation trial. They're less than 1% of the action in defamation litigation. And yet the only thing that the Dáil spoke about was juries. And when the Seanad took it up in July, we counted 11,500 words spoken in the 2-hour debate. The word retail was mentioned once, and it's 99% of the problem.
Right.
So the real victims are people who are running small corner shops, restaurants,
but
filling
sorry,
stations,
Neil,
and
just to move it on,
hotels.
But it sounds to me like then exploiting this is more lucrative than shoplifting, especially too if you can sort of find a way of employing people of a certain age as well. So, to get away with a bottle of vodka at a value of what, I don't know what it might be, but really then you could find yourself maybe getting 7 or 8 grand or even a higher number. That's the gravy of shoplifting then. That's
It really is, Greg, and it's terrible. It's such a cynical thing that's going on now. People are actually gone beyond actually stealing the stock now. What they do is they pretend to steal stock. Typically, as you mentioned, a bottle of vodka or a bottle of wine. They put it back on the shelf surreptitiously so that nobody sees them doing it. And if someone asks them, did you pay for that bottle of vodka or that bottle of wine? They open their coat and their bags and say, what bottle of
It's a
vodka?
double bluff, because then you're exposed to genuine shoplifters as well.
Exactly. This simply doesn't happen in other European countries. What happens here is totally wrong. It's immoral. And yet so much money. We estimate on figures from one of our members in the security business who provides static guarding for well-known symbol retail groups. And they have a current liability of 3 million euro across 93 defamation cases. So based on his kind of market share, we estimate this is worth somewhere between 30 and 50 million euros a year,
It's
about
fascinating. I mean,
40 million of which will go to the lawyers.
Yeah, outstripping probably people who might have faked injury in car collisions or stepped out in front of car. I mean, this is another space where those in the know can really, really exploit
Yes.
that. I find it hard to believe when someone's stepping onto your private property, and even if they were stopped on your private property and asked this question, I think there should be some level of compliance to that request once they're in your space, but anyway, it's a peculiar one. I didn't know about it, Neil. Listen, sorry to rush it along, but you're probably up to your ears anyway. So thanks very much for your time.
Thanks very
All
much,
right, take
Greg.
care.
Best of luck.
Bye-bye. By the way, I'd be very interested, even off the record, if any businesses listening have been the victims of these defamation claims, and maybe give us an idea of the settlement, etc. As I say, you don't have to divulge the business, but give us the info and we can pass it on to the listeners.